Welcome to Words of Grace, radio ministry of Elder Ben Winslet, pastor of the Flint River Primitive Baptist Church near Huntsville, Alabama. We invite you to stay tuned to today's broadcast.
Great privilege to have you in our listening audience today. We do encourage you to write us and let us know that you listen to Words of Grace, that it has been impactful in your life. That means the world to us to hear from you. You can address that letter to Words of Grace, 641 Moontown Road, Brownsboro, Alabama, 35741. Or you can also go to flintriverpbc.org, that's flintriverpbc.org, and find our contact information online, our email address, as well as how to follow us on social media. If you're a person that uses Facebook, you can watch our sermons live each Sunday morning around 11 o'clock Central Time by going to facebook.com/Flint River Church.
Yeah.
today on Words of Grace, we're going to continue playing a portion of a message that we began playing for you last week entitled His Story. In this message, we use various occurrences of pre-incarnate manifestations of Christ, what we would refer to as a theophany, to demonstrate that despite the changing circumstances, despite the fact that Christ appears in times of battle and judgment and deliverance throughout human history, despite the fact that the faces change, the one thing that does remain is that God is in command, and this is, after all, His story. We look at examples from the lives of Abraham and Moses, Joshua, and the Israelites in Babylonian captivity, bringing us all the way to the New Testament, where we find the great coming of the Emmanuel into the world, that is to say, God with us. And if God be for us, as Paul wrote in the book of Romans chapter 8, who can be against us? We hope that this message is encouraging to you in this time of much confusion and distress, to understand that no matter what's happening in the world around us, God reigns. His purposes ripen fast. He is with His people. He loves us, and He cares for us. And all of human history is not our story, but it is very much His story. Here is His Story, Part 2.
Another one that I want to consider, and this is, again, a time of judgment and deliverance, is in the book of Genesis, chapter 18. Genesis 18, 1, "The Lord appeared unto him," him being Abraham, "in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him." Now, he didn't look and see three men walking up, and he's in the plains of Mamre, so it's not like he's there in the midst of a giant sage field and he's watching them approach. No, they appear beside him. They're not there, and then they're there. "Three men stood by him. When he saw him, he ran to meet them from the tent door, and he bowed himself toward the ground." Now, for those of you that might not be Bible readers, this is Abraham. Abraham is a very special man in biblical history. God called him out of Ur of the Chaldees, one of the colony cities after the flood, and he promised to Abraham that he would raise up seed to him, raise up children to him, and through the seed would all nations of the earth be blessed. And that seed, of course, as you know, is Christ. And so the promise that was given to Abraham was Christ, and that all families of the earth would be blessed. Here in Genesis 18, all nations of the earth would be blessed through this offspring that God would give Abraham and his wife Sarah. By the way, when God calls him out of Ur, he's 75 years old. God has to, in a sense, raise them. There's resurrecting in this because they were beyond the age to have children. It was as was with them, and Scripture says this, after the course of men and women. They couldn't have children. But God promises to bring life from the dead through Abraham and Sarah. God comes to Abraham, and there are three people here. Now, pay very careful attention to the narrative. God is revealing himself here. Just the first four words in Genesis 18, "And the Lord appeared." One of these individuals is the Lord. There are three that are here. Two of them at one point in the narrative leave. In chapter 19, we read the first verse, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even." Two angels. And so who we have present before Abraham is a pre-incarnate manifestation of Christ and two angels. Three men. They appear as men. Abraham brings water and washes their feet. He encourages them to rest. He brings them food. Abraham runs into Sarah and has Sarah hurry and make food for them. God begins to speak. "Where is Sarah thy wife? Behold, in the tent." Now, this is a time of judgment and deliverance. But it also includes the promise of Christ, as with Genesis chapter 3. Lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. And Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? Well, if any other individual had said this to her, she might have reason to laugh, but this is God. The Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of surety bear a child when I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? And Sarah begins denying, I didn't laugh. Oh, yeah, you did. God did. God said, nay, but thou didst laugh. Oh, you laughed. You laughed all right. Even if it was in your heart, I heard you. Why? Because I'm a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. What does God continue to promise? That Abraham will become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. Verse 18. What is God telling Abraham? Well, first of all, he's talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. Shall I hide the thing from Abraham that I'm going to do? But this is, again, God preaching his own intention of sending Christ into the world to Abraham. And twice here he does it. All nations of the earth will be blessed. Now, God would give Abraham and Sarah a child. Who is that child? It would be Isaac. Isaac is the promised seed. Paul referred to him as such in the book of Romans. But understand that a greater than Isaac was in mind, was in view when God spoke in these prophetic words. Ultimately, he has reference to Christ. Christ is the seed that should come through whom all nations, even all families, should be blessed. Why all families? Because God has a people out of every nation, kindred, and tongue. The word kindred means a family. God has redeemed people out of every family in the world. God then goes to reveal unto Abraham what he's going to do. I'm come down to behold the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, whether they have done altogether to the cry of it, which has come unto me. If not, I'll know. The men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom. But Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And so two of them leave. Abraham is there speaking with one of the three, the one referred to as the Lord. He's talking to Christ, pre-incarnate manifestation of Christ. And lo and behold, in chapter 19 in verse 1, what happens? Two angels arrive at Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham draws near. Will you destroy the righteous with the wicked? What if there are 50 righteous within the city? Paraphrasing. God says, I won't destroy it for 50. Abraham, in his boldness, begs God over and over. Let me ask you again. I guess he begins to reconsider and he starts to think, you know, maybe there's not 50. Maybe there aren't 50. He whittles it down to 10. Lord, will you destroy it? Will you spare it for 10? If there are 10 righteous in all those cities? God says, I won't destroy it for 10. Now, God knows who's righteous and who's wicked and everything else that's taking place in that city. But when he comes to judge, he many times does that as a judge there in person. And he does so here. There's coming a day, this is pointing to a day, by the way, when Jesus Christ, God himself, will come personally and finally, ultimately judge all of the world. This is pointing towards that judgment. God comes, there's judgment, but there's also deliverance. God says, I won't destroy it for 10. As we know how the story plays out, God would not find 10 righteous in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. But he did find some righteous people there. Specifically, a just man whose righteous soul was vexed, a man named Lot. The glorious, comforting promise at Sodom was that even though God destroyed this wicked city, God delivered the righteous. And so when there is judgment divine, there will also be the deliverance, the salvation of God's people. God comes to judge. God also comes to deliver. So many times those two are coupled together. If you're worried about judgment in our country today, you have reason to be, but also understand when God judges, He also delivers His people, particularly when they are faithful to Him. With those words, I simply quote Jesus in the Olivet Discourse. Remember Lot's wife. Don't look back. Simply follow Christ. Don't look back, follow Christ. This is a theophany. Another one is in the book of Exodus, chapter 3. In the book of Exodus, chapter 3, this is not God revealing Himself in the form of a man, but rather in the form of a burning bush. But I want you to see one phrase that God used here. It's one more example in His story of God speaking to men. In Exodus, chapter 3, Moses has left Egypt. He's in the backside of the desert, according to verse 1. How would you like to live in the backside of the desert? We talk about living in the middle of nowhere. Well, he lives in the backside of the desert. Not even the front side of the desert. Not the good part of the desert. He's living in the backside of the desert. In the backside of the desert, he passes Mount Horeb, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of the fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Christ is going to speak to him out of this bush. Now, the angel of the Lord appeared in that bush, but you notice that it is God who spoke to him. Verse 4, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush. And he said, Moses. And Moses said, Here am I. You know the narrative. God tells him that I'm going to deliver my people out of Egypt. I'm going to judge. Pharaoh's going to be judged. Moses asks, when I go to them and I say, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they say, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said unto Moses, I am that I am. Thus shalt thou say to the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. God sends him on his way. There is judgment. Great judgment, but there's also deliverance for his people. Now, the reason that I wanted to use this portion of Scripture as an example, tell them, I am, hath sent me, has sent you, Moses. In the book of John, chapter 8, as these unbelieving Jews question Jesus and argue with Jesus and talk about the fact in their mind, we're Abraham's seed. We've never been in bondage to any man. Jesus said, Abraham rejoiced to see my day. He saw it and he was glad. We already looked at one example of that in Genesis 18. Genesis 22 is another one. Genesis 15. Genesis 12. God promises to Abraham. Abraham rejoices. The Jews say, you're not even 50 yet and you've seen Abraham. Verily, verily, I say unto you, Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. In the two occurrences of the greatest acts of deliverance in human history to God's people, Egypt and the greater Egypt, salvation from sin, God takes upon himself the title of I am. Not I was, not I will be, not I might be, but I am. Why? Because he's teaching us that he is and that he cares for his people, that he will deliver his people. Deliverance is because he is. Jesus pronounced that in John 18 as they came to arrest him, I am, and they fell backwards on the ground. The simple pronunciation of his deity, I am. Tell them, I am hath sent thee. Fast forward to another chapter in Israel's history, to another man of God, to another battle, to another deliverance, to another judgment. The book of Joshua, chapter 5. This is after the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. This would be the last chapter in which God sent manna to feed them every day as they wandered in the wilderness, because they would go into Canaan's land and from henceforth they would eat the fruit of that land. Joshua 5:12. As Joshua, the leader of Israel after Moses died, is preparing for war, they surround Jericho. In the next chapter, God has them circle the city and blow trumpets, and the walls fall from the inside out. It's miraculous. God was with them. He fought their battles for them. Came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said, "Art thou for us or for our adversaries? Are you on our side or theirs?" Isn't that the question that we so often have in the world today? Human beings are always polarized. It's just our nature. Us and them. Are you for us or for you? Are you for them? I love this answer. No. Nay. I'm with someone far greater. I don't answer to you, Joshua. And I'm not with the Canaanites. Nay, but as captain of the Lord's host, captain of the host of the Lord, I am now come. The word captain, the Hebrew word, also translates prince. I am captain of the Lord's host. I am prince. Sometimes this word can have reference even to angels. Is this an angel? Joshua did fall on his face. He fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, "What saith my Lord to thy servant," to his servant? Now, is this an angel? It's a good question. What does the captain of the Lord's host say in reply to Joshua? "Loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy." I remind you of an occurrence in the book of Revelation, chapter 22. John falls down and he worships the angel which showed him all the things in the book of Revelation. And the angel said unto him, "See, thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren the prophets and of them which keep the sayings of this book. I'm just like anybody else that you've ever known. Worship God." God alone is to be worshiped. Not men, not angels. When Joshua worships the captain of the Lord's host, the captain of the Lord's host accepts the worship and tells him to take the shoes off his feet, which was what Moses was told at the bush that burned but was not consumed. You're standing on holy ground. This is Christ. In a time of battle, in a time of judgment against Jericho for their wickedness, in a time of deliverance of God's people as he gave them the land that overflowed with milk and honey. Last one from the Old Testament. In the book of Daniel, chapter 3, and verse 25, I'll give you the summary of Daniel 3. The nation of Israel, the Jews, Judea, Judah, they'd been carried into Babylonian captivity as a judgment. They would be here 70 years, but they were told to remain faithful to their God. Three faithful Hebrew boys who'd been renamed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down and worship a colossus image of Nebuchadnezzar, a very arrogant king, most powerful man in the world in this day and time. Chapter 4 would deal with his judgment and his, in a sense, conversion. God taught him a thing or two. I encourage you to go read that one. He throws him, these three men, into a fiery furnace because they refused to bow down to idols. Civil disobedience in the name of God. The only time Scripture commends it. As they look in and see these three in the midst of the fire, Nebuchadnezzar says, "Astonished, did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" "True, O king." He arose and said, "Lo, I see four men loosed, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God, Christ with them in the fire." Over and over, God with his people, in moments of judgment, in moments of deliverance, because We come and go. As they said of David, his sepulcher is with us unto this day. There's a cemetery a couple of miles of here where our church had their original location. Half the tombstones are lost to time. Graves have caved in as people have turned to dust. And no one knows the names on the remaining stones. But through all of the course of time, he remains. His purposes will be accomplished because this is his story. And as his story, let's go to the New Testament as our closing passage. Behold, a virgin shall be with child, quoting the book of Isaiah, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is being interpreted God with us. As Paul asked in the book of Romans, Chapter 8, if God be for us, who can be against us? Does that mean that we live prosperous lives without illness and plenty of wealth? No, read the rest of that chapter. For thy sake, we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. Why? Because if God be for us, who can be against us? Even in death, the worst that the world can do, we depart to be with Christ, which is far better. I want to remind us all this morning that this is his story, not ours. The world doesn't belong to us. Time doesn't belong to us. It doesn't belong to America. It belongs to Christ, who has revealed himself to his people in moments of judgment, in moments of deliverance, as the God who is faithful, who cares for you, who will always be with you, who will never leave you nor forsake you. God has been with us from the beginning. He will be with us to the end, and may he be glorified.
If you enjoy the messages you hear on Words of Grace, consider this your invitation to visit a Primitive Baptist church in your community. An online directory is available at marchtozion.com. Copies of this and other broadcasts are available for download on iTunes and on our website. And finally, Words of Grace is a listener-supported program. To contact us, address your correspondence to Words of Grace Radio, 641 Moontown Road, Brownsboro, Alabama, 35741, or visit us online at flintriverpbc.org.